The Voice of Reason Broadcast Network presents The Orthodox Nationalist. Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson is a former professor, a professional writer, and a priest of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. His website is rusjournal.com. That's rusjournal.com. Now here's your host, Matt Johnson.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to this special edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. I am putting this radio presentation together very, very quickly because today is the day that General Ratko Mladic was arrested by Serbian police and will be tried in one way or another by the so-called war crimes tribunal at The Hague. Today is the 26th of May, 2011, and I only found out about this particular incident just a few hours ago. And this is something that, a set of issues that I've been following, most of my adult life. And I've read, pretty much every bit of information that's been published, at least in English, on this, since the 90s when all of this began. I distinctly remember and even took notes on the CNN, reports, that came over, regularly, from the beginning of the war in Yugoslavia straight through to the so-called Srebrenica massacre and everything else. And so so much of this has stuck in my mind. You'll have to pardon me if I'm a little choppy today because I haven't had tons of time to prepare because this is breaking news, and so this is going to be it has to be topical, and I normally don't do topical things. I do things that have kind of an evergreen, historical and religious things that are going to be around forever. But this is something that gets talked about, but because of the events of today, are going to be, spoken about constantly. All right. Now, even if you don't care that much about the Yugoslav issue, this particular arrest, future trial of Milosevic a few years ago, the media reports and all the pressure groups involved in crafting all of these stories have tremendous implications for anyone who are nationalists or paleoconservatives in the Western world, because we will be treated the same way. He has already declared guilty. It was the Economist of London on their online edition has already said that he's guilty. These news reports are saying that he did all of this. And so they're really, there doesn't seem to be any point of a trial. They've already convicted him. They've spent years associating his name with, terrorism and mass murder. But one of the most important facts that we need to understand about this whole thing is that in the early 90s, the Croatian government at the time and certainly the Bosnian Islamic government, when Yugoslavia began to break up, went to the Rudderfin public relations firm in New York City and paid them a lot of money. And Rudderfin then went on to plant a lot of stories in the New York Times and the Washington Post. They hired a bunch of writers. They hired journalists. They hired academics. They hired anybody who was willing to toe the line. And Milosevic refused to do this. And in fact, I know that for absolutely certain, because I know the man who actually went to Belgrade and asked Milosevic to please step up your PR, because your enemies certainly are. And he said, no, I don't need this. But that's typical of a communist style bureaucrat. You know, Milosevic, was a, you know, I think he was a principled man in many respects. He was very typical in the Serbian case in that he went from some kind of watered down Marxism, to nationalism. And of course, these people, like Markovic and many others, they were converted by the situation in Kosovo. And people who were Marxists, so many of the so-called Praxis group in Belgrade, they moved to sort of a social nationalist point of view due to the problems in Kosovo. And the Albanian government, communist government at the time, was paying Albanians, and really throughout the so-called Cold War, were paying Albanians to immigrate to Kosovo. And of course, their rate of reproduction was higher than the Serbs living there. So the use of Rutherfin, and Rutherfin, by the way, of course, they aren't anyone's last names. Rutherfin refers to rudder, like a rudder that steers a ship, and a fin, the appendage that steers a fish. That's a play on words. They're manipulating and steering public opinion. That's certainly not a coincidence. But so really the first implication in all of this is that the man has already been declared guilty by the media, by talking heads, very few of whom know very much about Serbian history. And but that's a separate issue. The second implication is that is simply the fact, is of course the concept of the PR firm and the very important role, and very secretive role, of the PR firm in controlling public opinion. As far as I know, this hasn't been dealt with to any great extent. Certainly is non-existent as far as the public mind is concerned. The third implication is simply a matter of knowledge. I've said on this show, and I've said a million times over, that there are people. The way that the system operates, the more obscure the population, the easier it is to tell lies about them. Very few people in America know the first thing about the Balkans. Most Americans really don't know that much about European history, never mind Balkan history. And certainly even fewer have any functional knowledge on the specific Serbian historical role in Southeastern Europe. And so you could pretty much tell the American anything about that. And it's relatively easy. Well, I remember the Russians in New York City when the bombing under the Clinton administration first began in the 90s in Serbia, that this was in many important ways a test case. Serbia was a case, Iraq was a case, Somalia was a case. These were the three original test cases in how the New World Order can manipulate news, can create news, can create reality. And in those three cases, Iraq, Somalia, and Serbia, they are three countries. Only one of them actually referring to an ethnic group, and that's that of course is the Serbs. In Somalia, there are many ethnic groups. In Iraq, there are many ethnic groups and religions. You have three obscure countries. Three countries whose history and politics are almost totally unknown, and that are known only by slogans and cliches by those who deal with foreign policy full time. And so with those three, you could more or less say whatever you want and get away with it. And that's what happened. And the final implication, which we need to talk about quite a bit. That's the complete lack of knowledge. For the last hour or so, I've been surfing the web, reading I must have read 100 separate news reports, from the English language press around the world. They all say the exact same thing. They say it in the exact same wording. The numbers that they cite terms of those who that the Serbian forces, the RS, the Republika Srpska, killed in Srebrenica have or the numbers are identical, and how the argument is crafted is identical. And this is a case in New York Times, the English language paper in New Delhi, India. This is the case in the Australian papers. This is the case in English language papers in Africa. It's all one and the same. And this is something that I've been saying for a long time, and that when the New World Order finds something that's very, very important to them, you'll see that the media very quickly goes into lockstep. The New World Order elites find something that isn't important to them, you can have substantial debate. So that's the introduction here. This situation is so crucial, regardless of what you may think about the Serbs or the Muslims or the Croats or anybody else. The fact that this man has already been declared guilty by people often who don't know the first thing about the extremely, almost laughably complex world of Balkan and Yugoslav politics. That should raise your eyebrows. I don't care what your particular point of view is. The fact that the media is saying the same things in the same language over and over again without criticism or without deviation should raise your eyebrows. Now, this is clearly not the first time that that's happened, but I have never seen, I can't say that I've ever seen a media uniformity and conformity in any particular political issue that's hit us in the last 20 years, like the Serbian case. Because even the anti-war movement and the left and some of these groups have come to the defense of Iraq and Somalia against American intervention. But outside of the Serbian diaspora, and many of whom are very much uninformed about this, there's been no substantial defense of Serbia or Mladic and Karadzic. I mean, we could go on and on about all of these people. And then, of course, there's always Milosevic's ambiguous political position. You know, he's some sort of a national Bolshevik. I mean, there's always been questions about that. So it isn't as if there's this foundation. And Milosevic did nothing when he was alive, and he was actually in Belgrade, to change this. You know, Milosevic had a bureaucratic mind. Someone like Mladic did not. He was actually considered a first-class officer. And something that's important to know about Mladic is that his soldiers obeyed him not out of some bureaucratic military obligation, but due to a very powerful charisma that he had over his followers. So all of this, to summarize, it shows the evil and corruption of the New World Order. For the last 20 years, the last 15 years, I have been reading academic papers and books. They have all passed peer review. They've all been edited. They all say the same thing with a handful of rare exceptions. They repeat things that they think are facts that they largely get either from Rutter Finn or from The Hague or from the New York Times, and they simply repeat it. They assume that the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN is an authoritative source on these things, and therefore it's a legitimate footnote and it can't be challenged. No issue, not Iraq, not Somalia, not the European Union, not the attacks on Russia, none of these things. Nothing has convinced me of the mindless conformity of the talking heads, whether in academia or in journalism, than the Serbian issue. We've dealt with Belarus and Burma on these programs, and the same principle applies. These aren't nearly the major issue that the Serbian situation has become, because the U.S. was actually militarily involved in the Balkans, but not in Belarus or Burma. But in all three cases, you have the same thing. You have attacks made by non-specialists, in fact, in many cases, people who don't know anything. You have complete journalistic and academic uniformity. You have the same slogans repeated over and over again without criticism, and even more disturbing, without the ability to criticize. So this has greater implications for those of us who are called extremists in American and Western politics, because there's simply no reason why something like this couldn't happen to any of us. And if the regime finds it important enough, they will make certain that their friends operate in lockstep. All right, so those are the basic implications, and they're far-reaching in terms of the trustworthiness of these people who control opinion, the way that secrecy and manipulation are used. And, you know, I'm reading a lot of blogs. The last half hour or so, I've been reading a lot of blogs. And the blogs are really a bad place to go. And I don't read these unless I'm specifically looking for what the average blogger is thinking or feeling. And I've said before that the average blogger is a problematic person. And they often spend a lot of time venting their anger about a topic about which they know almost nothing. And it's been overwhelmingly emotional, screaming and yelling, writing in all caps, using curse words, anything to demonize the Serbs and demonize Milosevic in particular. And usually what happens when they're challenged, every once in a while you see a Serbian name or a Russian name, and they'll challenge the person who's making these statements, and all they'll say in response is, you're an idiot, you're a nationalist, you know, as if that's an insult. And we all know this. We know it's true because CNN says it, New York Times says it, and the UN says it, or at least used to say it. The court at The Hague, you know, all of this, you know, these are authoritative sources, and come on, this is just, you know, we just know it's true. So either you're dealing with people who might have an ethnic connection to the situation, people who may be of Islamic background or whatever, or the other option, which is far more chilling, is the idea that they may really just be so brainwashed over the years that this is simply an animalistic response. You know, like a mother cat protecting her babies. And I remember, it wasn't really that long ago, I know Tomislav Sunic had said that when we debate people, when we argue with people, we never demonize them, we never sink to their level. We always treat our opponents with respect. We treat them with dignity because really, that's the only way to win a debate. You lose a debate if you fly off the handle. You lose a debate if you start name calling. And I've always had this tendency because I'm a very temperamental person and I get very angry very easily. And it's a character flaw that I have. Because the fact is that when you react that way, your mind gets clouded. When you react with anger, the blood starts pumping, the liver releases a lot of stored chemicals, stored blood sugar, stuff like this, and it affects how you think. These physiological changes when you get angry, it affects how you think, and you no longer think clearly. Your body shifts into, you know, animal mode, that I want to beat the crap out of you rather than be rational. So the minute you lose your temper, you've already lost. And if both of you lose your temper in a debate, then there's really nothing to be learned, and you end up fighting physically, if that's possible. So I agree with him in this. And so when I deal with this issue, although it's very, very difficult, because I'm dealing with people who don't seem to have any particular ethnic connection or religious connection to the area, and yet they respond with such vehemence. How can you possibly think that Milosevic was innocent of these charges, or that Milosevic was justified in his actions during the Bosnian War, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? And they get very angry, and they usually end up calling me a name or something. And yet they, other than media propaganda, they haven't seemed to, you know, have any particular interest in it. It's something that we all know. We're part of the cognoscenti. We want to be considered sophisticated and intelligent. And this is one of the things we have to say. Otherwise, they'll call us an idiot and whatever. All right. That's sort of the introduction. I know that was long-winded, but Those are the issues that we could all bring out of this Mladic case, regardless of what we think of the issues involved. Regardless of what we think of the Bosnian War, of Yugoslavia, Milosevic, Markovic, Karadzic, all of these people, Mladic himself, Serbian Radical Party, media, on, you know, regardless of what we think of these people, and regardless of our point of view on Yugoslavia, these implications are deadly serious. These implications are redefining how global politics and domestic politics, and the dividing line between those two is almost non-existent, are being absorbed in the Western world. The role of media that creates images and creates reality, rather than, of course, reporting the news, and the connection between government, media, and the public relations firm, that triangle, and completely creating a reality that may or may not actually exist. That's an implication that we can all agree on, regardless of our basic point of view. Okay, that's my intro speech for now. We're going to take a break. Hang in there.
Don't go away, because there's more to come on the Orthodox Nationalist. You're listening to the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network. Visit us at reasonradionetwork.com. Let's return to the Orthodox Nationalist, brought to you by the Voice of Reason Broadcast Network, reasonradionetwork.com.
Okay, everybody, welcome back to what is a special edition of the Orthodox Nationalist, because today, this is the evening of May 26, 2011, the day when Ratko Mladic was apprehended by the Serbs. And of course, now the Yugoslavia war and the Bosnia war and the Serbian issue and all of this again and again and again is being rehashed in the media. The first half of this program, I apologize for this. I had to put this together very, very quickly, to get it on, this evening when you're hearing it now. And so I've had to put this together quickly, and it's a little choppy, and I apologize. But, I have no choice, because this is now front page news, and it's an area of expertise of mine, and so I have an obligation, for better or for worse, to comment on this. So the first half that you just heard, I dealt with the basic ramifications and issues, the big issues, apart from the actual Bosnian war that this particular situation involves concerning media, etc. But that's only part of the story. The other part of the story is, what is the truth of the case? I remember September 11th, 2001, I was working, the editor of the Barnes Review at the time, with John Tiffany, and the two of us were listening to the radio, because we had just gotten into the office, and that's when 9/11 occurred. And John and I are listening to the radio, and within, I want to say, if I remember this very, very well, within about a minute after the special report came on, as the planes smashed into the towers, the media had already blamed Osama bin Laden. And I was immediately suspicious. How can they possibly know this such a very short amount of time after the event, especially when you consider that the previous action of what was allegedly Osama's group was pushing out a little raft with a bomb in it, the USS Cole. If you remember that particular incident, the bomb did very little damage. I'm supposed to believe that this man went from pushing a raft with a bomb in it to the Cole ship in Middle Eastern waters at the time, to masterminding what clearly was a highly complex plan. And of course, I didn't believe it then, and I don't believe it now. But initially, my first reaction is that this is absurd. This is typical media. The thing just happened. It just so happens that John and I had just gotten into the office, and it happens. The radio breaks in with a special report, tells us about it, and then informs us that this is probably the result of a Middle Eastern Islamic terrorist organization, probably Osama bin Laden. That kind of mentality, you know, is typical in all of these areas that the regime has considered important to itself. As I said before, the newspapers are, without exception, in English anyway, the newspapers are without exception claiming that Mladic is guilty, that there was a massacre of innocent men, women, and children at Srebrenica, during the Bosnian War, and that Mladic did it, and he's definitely guilty, and Serbs are evil. This is what I've heard over and over and over again. The numbers are the same, the arguments are the same, and the fact that the man has already been declared guilty. Everything is inverted, everything is perverted here. Now, I remember that all of this happened when I was in grad school, and I was following this stuff like a hawk. I read every paper. I read everything I could get my hands on this issue at the time, because then, as now, I'm interested in the Slavs, interested in the Orthodox people, whether they're actually observant or not, and ethnic politics in Europe and elsewhere. So clearly, the fact that this was now center stage, I had an obligation as a student, as a future professional, to follow this and follow it clearly. I distinctly remember watching CNN and having these talking heads say that we have just got word that a 500,000 Muslims were murdered by Serbs at the Srebrenica in the town, and that this was a demilitarized zone, and that the Serbs really have committed genocide. It's a war crime, and that this is the greatest war crime committed on European soil since World War II. They said this over and over again. Of course, the 500,000 figure went down to 300,000, then it went down to 250,000, then it went down to 100,000, and now I think they're claiming 2,500. So the numbers have gone down. Clearly it was wildly inflated for the sake of making a political point. Milosevic and Mladic at the time were compared to Adolf Hitler, and that they were the new Nazis, and this is why we need to intervene on behalf of the oppressed Islamic people of Bosnia. And I was as suspicious of that as I was later on with the Osama bin Laden. How do you possibly know this? How do you know that they were innocent? Where are the bodies of the children? No one's ever seen them. No one's, even as I speak, no one's ever seen them. Where is this information coming from? Of course, at the time, I didn't realize that the Bosnian Muslims had hired Rudolf Finn in New York to promote their cause in media and in academia. I would go into the university the following day, and these professors, who were supposed to be professional critics and scholars, would simply walk into the class and repeat and pontificate about how evil the Serbs were. And this is one of the things that got me into trouble, because it wasn't so much that I, at the time, just defended the Serbs. It was just that it seemed to me that their evidence was really flimsy and something is very suspicious. Now, over the years, a lot's happened. I think the media has been successful in driving it into the popular mind that the Serbs are inherently evil and they massacre people really for no good reason. And Hitler did the same thing, and Lukashenko in Belarus does the same thing, and the Burmese do the same thing, and this is just how they are. And this has happened pretty regularly. What are the facts of the matter? You need to remember a few things. Something that I used to say in a university classroom as all of this was going on in the mid-90s was that the Serbs should be excused for being a little jumpy because there have been several attempts to exterminate the Serbs from the face of the earth. Not just one, several. This includes the Hungarian camps of World War I. It includes the German occupation of Serbia, where many, many, many thousands of Serbs were executed. In terms of collective punishment, and I have quotations from German military authorities in Serbia saying that this is probably not the best policy. We should be making allies of the Serbs rather than being opposed to them. And I could produce those for you if you need. They were under Turkish occupation for a long time. They were under a genocidal regime of the Croats in World War II. They were, of course, under a communist regime for a long time, where the church was to a great extent made illegal, except for a few institutions. And of course, we have the situation where the Bosnian Muslim government had declared as early as 1993, that they were going to create an Islamic state in all of Bosnia. So needless to say, both Croats and Serbs were somewhat threatened by this. The Serbs have been, in World War I and World War II, they lost over half their population. I think they can be excused for being a little jumpy when Islamic leaders make these kind of declarations. Fact number two, the historical reality is that all the Balkan peoples were under Turkish control for a very long period of time. From basically the fall of Constantinople, let's say from 1453 to 1500, straight up really until the middle of the 19th century. That's a long time to be under colonial rule. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that these people are going to be very sympathetic to nationalism and national self-determination. The Muslims, however, were those who were either forced to convert to Islam or converted to Islam so as to become first-class rather than third-class citizens. So they are either leftovers from the old colonial rulers or cowards who converted so as they could get, they could get good jobs, they could get government positions, because you had to be Islamic in order to have that position in the Turkish authority. So to think that there's going to be any tolerance between as if the Serbs owe these people anything. These have been oppressors of the Serbian nation for a long time. I don't care what religious background you are, empires are a problem. Especially when you consider that Serbia at one point was one of the most powerful and wealthy states in Eastern Europe. Starting really from Milutin all the way to Dušan. Now, it was a fairly short period of time, and yet you had a wealthy, strong state that almost became, under Dušan, the next emperor of Byzantium, of Constantinople. To go from that to foreign occupation for a long period of time is a lot for anyone to bear. the huge amount of people that were lost in World War I and World War II for a tiny country is absolutely appalling. You're talking more than half the population. So, you know, they need to get the benefit of the doubt. Anybody who has been through this has to get the benefit of the doubt in this case. All right. What is Mladic being tried for? He will be tried for an alleged massacre. The numbers never seem to stay the same at Srebrenica during the Bosnian War. The claim is that Mladic massacred men, women, and children in this area and encouraged his soldiers to rape the same men, women, and children for the sake of torturing them. That was it. That's what he's being tried for. Now, there are three sources over the years that I have come across from both Forsenik analysis as well as eyewitness account, non-biased, and they're not Serbs, nor are they Croats, Islamic, or anything else. That is the Dutch army that was located in the town at the time, the Spanish military observer, actually the deputy chief observer from Portugal, Carlos Branco, and then finally a Spanish Forsenik team that was sent into the area. Now, I use these three authorities because they're not ethnically or religiously biased. All three of them deny charges that are normally made against Mladic. The big issue is that this, of course, was not a demilitarized zone. I remember CNN saying that this was. And we know that this was a massacre and this wasn't combat because there was no combat. No one believes that anymore. But that was the initial attack on Mladic and the Republika Srpska in Bosnia. At the time, of course, it was the headquarters of the Bosnian army. It was the headquarters of the 28th Infantry Division of the Bosnian Muslim Army. And this, you know, and so initially, the whole thing was based on pure mythology. I don't think anyone holds seriously that it was a demilitarized zone anymore. The Bosnian Muslims there were armed, although people like Branko, who were right there. Now, Branko's view, he was the military advisor from for the UN. He's of Portuguese background. But then not only was he at Srebrenica at the time of the fall of the city, but then he also was present for the debriefing of other military observers who were there at the same time, including the Dutch infantry, who initially said that Mladic didn't do anything wrong, that these were all combat deaths, and Mladic was a talented general. The Bosnian Muslims were poorly equipped, and they were really either poorly led or not led at all. And Branko and some others hold that it's kind of odd why the Muslims didn't fight very well. The Muslims did not really spend a lot of time, including the use of heavy artillery that they had, in this place, really did a very poor job. And in fact, Branko says he was right there when the Muslims tried to get the Dutch military forces to do their fighting for them. And there was one Dutch battle casualty killing, and he was killed by a Muslim. And ultimately, after all the Forsenik analysis, they were 2,000 members of the Bosnian 28th Division that were killed in combat. There is no evidence in either Branko's eyewitness account, the eyewitness account of the other UN military observers who Branko was part of their debriefing sessions, the Dutch infantry unit that was at Srebrenica at the time, and the Spanish Forsenik team that was sent in by, I believe, the UN, claimed that there were any women or children there. At least, and if they were, there were civilians that were killed in a crossfire, not by any kind of deliberate action. At least there's no evidence of that. But all the graves that they discovered were men. There were men wearing both Serbian and Bosnian uniforms. And the Spanish War Cynic team made it clear that these were all very typical normal combat deaths. There were executions that Mladic was involved in, but these were after the fact. These were after the battle, and these were combat men from the 28th Division. So again, this is the evidence. You don't have any evidence of rapes. You certainly don't have any evidence of women or children. You don't have any evidence that this was a demilitarized zone. This was a particularly nasty exchange of fire. And it just so happens that a very large Croatian force, about 100,000, including some Muslims and others, were on the borders of the Serbian Republic. And in many ways, this was a method of gaining extra territory. It should be noted, by the way, that prior to the actual battle for the town, Karadzic had gone to the Bosnian Muslim leader and said, let's make a truce here. You give us Vogasha and we'll give you Srebrenica. I mean, this is probably the easiest way to, you know, but the Bosnian Muslims, were being advised by the U.S. and the CIA, and they were told to tell the Serbs no. So this trade, both in terms of population and in terms of population and in terms of territory, failed. And that was strictly because the Begovic, the head of the Bosnian Muslim government, as well as a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, refused to negotiate with Karadzic at the time. And now, if some of you may remember, back in 94, 95, 96, there were numerous, especially 95, 96, there were numerous pictures purportedly taken from satellite showing these mass graves full of women and children. These have not been found at the site in the town itself, and were fabrications. It may have been taken from somewhere else. Who knows where it's from? But they've now been fully exposed as fabrications because no one has found the origin of these pictures. But this was the initial justification for the Clinton administration to go into the Serbian ex-Yugoslav space and to take military action. So the simple fact is that by eyewitness accounts that are non-biased, at least as far as I know are non-biased, as well as the Spanish Four Cynic team has found no evidence of any wrongdoing, certainly nothing close to the initial, I think it was, you know, 500,000, if not higher, back in 95, now down to either 7,500 to 2,500, depending on who you read. But the fact that he's guilty of killing a whole bunch of these innocent people is something that, at least in major media, is not being seriously discussed. And none of these questions, the threat to the Serbs in Bosnia, the Croatian and Bosnian military pressure on the Serbs at the time, the fact that the 28th Bosnian Division was in Srebrenica, the fact that all the bodies found were in uniform, combat, deaths or executions, battlefield executions, of combatants. All of this stuff, is being kept out of the press. So, I'm sorry this presentation has been a little choppy, but, I felt it very important that I put this together quickly and get this out, because it is Thursday, which is my night to be on the air. And so this has to get out today because this is front page news. And this, again, I'm just scratching the surface of really the big issues here, militarily, culturally, and everything else. And really the history of the Serbs, as being the frontline fighters against colonial occupation. This was the case when they fought for the Austrians. This was the case when they fought against the Turks, the 18th and 19th centuries. This has consistently been, the Serbian, role in the world. And the battle against the Germans during World War II, as I've said many times, really the result of the British coup, which overthrew Prince Paul, who was pro-German, The Serbian economy was very closely tied to the Germans at the time, and then their replacement with Peter, who then immediately allied himself with the British, and indirectly the Soviet Union. And so that sort of confusing problem led to the German occupation, and yet there were many Serbs who continued to support the Germans there. The Germans made themselves very unwelcome very quickly. And you had a right-wing anti-German movement, and then you had a left-wing anti-German movement, and the pro-German movement was fairly small. And we'll deal with people like Ljotić and Nedić some other time. But the general point is, regardless of what you think of this particular set of issues, the evidence is iffy at best, highly problematic, and is actively being suppressed. And that has implications for all of us. And so I know that this has been a very sketchy and very quick summary of things, but I need to get this out ASAP, and Mike Connor has to scramble to get this on the air as soon as he can. Thank you very much for listening. And if you want to send me an email on this issue, please do so. I'll get back to you as quickly as possible. Thank you, and goodbye.
Thanks for listening. The Orthodox Nationalist returns Thursday evening, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. Join us at ReasonRadioNetwork.com.
Tuned into Radio Aryan.